Welcome to the Self-Insurance Podcast, brought to you by CRNBC. Every week, we are interviewing restaurant owners, industry experts, and brokers to explore the world of self-insurance for the California restaurant industry.
In PAGA, the standard of proof is lower. You have the ability to stack claims that the employee didn't even suffer. And that's one of the biggest problems I see, is that an employee who didn't actually suffer any of these allegations can still be the representative of a PAGA case as long as they suffered for one.
I'm joined today by Michael Adriani, a partner at Roxborough, Pomerantz, Nye, and Adriani. Thank you for being here today, Michael.
Thank you, Kaya.
So, Michael, your area of expertise is in all things employment law. Tell us just a little bit about your background.
Well, sure. I've been doing this for about 25 years at the same firm. I came out of law school and I've only worked at one place and developed quite a nice practice in representing employers in California and beyond, mostly in California. But a lot of our companies are multi-state companies. What we do is we have a specialty, I would say, in two areas. One is representing those businesses in disputes with their workers' compensation carriers. That would go from anything near and dear to your guys' hearts, of course, collateral disputes, claims handling disputes, disputes over reserves, and that kind of thing. And about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, that morphed into doing more standard labor and employment law because we have the same clients. We expanded our base that way. And now I primarily do, I would say, about 60% just straight employment law. And I deal with our dear friend PAGA, the Private Attorney General's Act, quite often on a daily basis, in fact.
And that's what we're here to talk about. Some people are calling it the sue your boss law.
It certainly is. It certainly is.
So to tee up this conversation, Michael, tell us why this law, what was the original intent of this law?
Well, back about 21 years ago, I believe it came into existence in about 2003, the state had done some studies and realized that a lot of employees had been the victims of wage theft, as they said. Now, in the California laws and the labor code, there are many, many sections that deal with penalties and damages and things that employees can collect for. A lot of those are penalties that only the state can pursue. The state would be the plaintiff, and the state would need to pursue the employers. But the state realized, with all these perceived damages and employees having not received their proper wages and so forth, the state determined that they didn't have the workforce to do the prosecution of these claims. So what they did was they created PAGA, literally the Private Attorney General's Act, which functioned to essentially deputize employees and more often than not their attorneys to pursue these claims on behalf of the state. So it essentially deputizes an employee, and like I said, their employee and their attorney, to become the attorney general, hence the name, Private Attorney General's Act. So it actually began with a privatization of something, which a lot of us might think is a good thing, but it certainly didn't turn out that way.
And similarly, like, and I'm an attorney also, even though I'm a CEO of CRNBC, I've been an attorney also for 23 years, so I understand this probably more than most. But just like workers' comp originally came about with good intentions and it's been abused, PAGA has become extremely abused. And that's what we want to kind of touch on today to explain the pitfalls and what we're seeing out there. And then we're going to end this with some tips and ways to protect. But first, let's talk about what went wrong.
Right. Well, what went wrong was by deputizing the employees, you are also deputizing their attorneys. And this became an end around what traditionally would be a class action. So class actions are collective lawsuits where many, many employees get to sue you at the same time for the same thing. Over the years, class actions have thankfully ebbed back a little bit, mostly due to arbitration agreements. If an employer has an arbitration agreement, they can get out of the class action allegations. But PAGA, because of the quirks of it, the arbitration agreements the courts have held don't apply to PAGA. And the reason is because when an employee signs an arbitration agreement with one of your members in the restaurant group, it's a contract between the restaurant and the employee. Well, the state didn't sign that contract, right? So when you have a PAGA action, the plaintiff is really the state. And so the state isn't subject to these things. And so you can have these employees and their attorneys suing for a wide variety of claims across thousands of employees, sometimes as many as they can put into a what would normally be a class action, but they use PAGA and they don't have to go to arbitration. So that's, I think, the main thing that went wrong with it, among several others, which I could
describe. Among many others, right. Right. One of the biggest being that it's not even the employee that, or the injured worker, if you want to say that, it's not even them that gets the money. The windfall is for all the attorneys, that the trial attorneys that are going after these claims.
Well, they say that, I started by saying it was perhaps drafted with good intentions, but the path to excessive attorney's fees is paved with good intentions, isn't it? So, yeah, it is a windfall for the attorneys, because not only do they get to avoid the arbitration, in PAGA, the standard of proof is lower. You have the ability to stack claims that the employee didn't even suffer. And that's one of the biggest problems I see, is that an employee who didn't actually suffer any of these allegations can still be the representative of a PAGA case as long as they suffered for one. So, for example, if you have a rest break claim in PAGA, a meal break claim, an overtime claim, and a wage statement claim, those four things, an employee can be a PAGA plaintiff or a PAGA representative having only suffered one of those things, and gets to represent an entire swath of employees on all of them. And that's one thing that really wasn't contemplated and couldn't have been the intention of the legislature back then.
And just to be clear to our listeners, you're on the good side.
I am. But I will say, I have done a number of plaintiff's lawsuits over the years, not strictly PAGA, but PAGA has been a tack on some things. And so I do understand the process from that perspective, but it actually makes me more in tune to the abuse of it. So yes, I'm almost exclusively a defense attorney on PAGA cases.
And we've seen it, our members in particular, I've seen some of these awards that have been, these judgments against them, and they are insane. Just crazy. And they're telling me that they're being told by their defense attorneys, just pay it. There's nothing you can do, just pay it. Tell us what you're seeing.
The same. There is, because at the end of the day, there is also an attorney's fees clause. So the attorneys are motivated to work these cases up. And so when you're saying your experience is people are being told, just pay it, a lot of that is motivated by the fact that, look, it's very hard to win these as a defendant. All you're going to do is accrue more fees, not just for yourself, but for the other side, because they will be making an application to be paid out their fees at the end of the day. So that is, like you said, one of the biggest problems with it. There are many horror stories that I could go through, many examples. There are even examples, and the courts have approved these, where a claim would be normally barred by a statute of limitations, and the plaintiff employee can still represent a class of people.
Give us a couple examples, just to, because I know the laundry list of violations that count under here are huge, are so many. Give us a couple examples of maybe the most awful ones you've seen.
Well, some of them are awful because they're absurd. So, for example, I have a retail client, a very large chain of retail discount stores. One day got one of these PAGA notifications. Why? Because his cashiers didn't have a place to sit down. Now, this is a very busy store. There's no place to put a chair. But if you look deep enough into the labor code, sure enough, there's something in there that says suitable seating. And a clever attorney and a willing plaintiff can make something of that, and to the tune of a seven-figure settlement at the end of the day. That's how absurd these kind of things are. That's not the biggest settlement I've seen, or the biggest, but that's temperature. That's another one. So the temperature's not right.
In that one that you just talked about, wasn't that one of the cases where not much money ended up going to the employees?
Oh, that is the case for many of these.
Right.
So when they're settled, actually, because the plaintiff is deputized as the state, 75% of the settlement is actually required to go back to the state. What they do with it, we just don't know. But really only 25% remains for this supposed class, and it's divvied up among thousands of people. So yes, at the end of the day, there wouldn't be that much. I'm not sure what the motivation is for the individual to pursue this other than being influenced by an attorney.
And so back to the one you were, I interrupted you, the temperature, tell me that one.
Well, it's the same sort of thing. If there's deep enough in the labor code, again, there's a temperature requirement for certain types of businesses, of warehouses and so forth. And that falls within the state's purview. So therefore it falls within PAGA. And somebody can be a representative, whether or not they were actually affected or damaged by the temperature, and represent a class of employees who may not have cared about the temperature at all, who weren't damaged, who weren't hurt. And that's part of the problem. These representative plaintiffs don't actually have to be aggrieved by everything. They just have to be aggrieved by one small thing to have this kind of standing and power to pursue these large cases. And I do not think it was the intent of the legislature to have it end up this way.
And now it's really become quite a gotcha law, because just like you're mentioning, somewhere in the bowels of the labor code, there's some thing that this well-meaning operator doesn't even realize that they're violating, and a crafty trial attorney goes and finds it. And so what can employers do?
Having valid, easy to read, easily accessible policies that are followed. Having an employee handbook can seem like a pain for some industries, but you have to do it. You have to have valid policies that are explained to employees upon hiring. And also throughout the course of your business lifecycle, you have to enforce them. You have to have a practice that fits the policy. Document everything and so on and so forth. It won't protect you from all of these, especially in a restaurant group. The restaurants are kind of like another large group of employers we represent are staffing companies. Staffing companies and restaurants have a little bit in common because your workforce isn't there with you face to face in a cubicle all the time. They're kind of doing their own thing. They're off at walking around. You don't exactly know what they're doing on break. So for those kind of industries, it's even more important to keep your policies and practices kept clean and monitored, reviewed, and communicated to the employees. That's the most important thing.
So in addition to policies and handbook, are there certain things when you have defended some of these claims that because they did this thing or had these things, it was easier for you to defend? Or let me state it another way, you wish that they did because you could have defended them if they had done these things?
We have had, and I have now, claims where I will put my foot on the ground and say, no, we're not settling this. We didn't do anything wrong. And nowadays, with some recent California Supreme Court decisions, if you have an arbitration agreement, and I would encourage your group members to have them for everybody, you can enforce it and have the individual part of the claim go to arbitration. Now, if you're sure that you can prevail, you can go to arbitration, get essentially a take nothing. If you think you can win and you think that particular employee didn't have any issues that befall him or her, or didn't actually get aggrieved by any of your policies, if you think you can go to an individual arbitration and prevail and get the arbitrator to say nothing happened, then you can, according to the California Supreme Court, come back to the PAGA case and say, there's nothing to do here. Go find somebody else. So that's a tiny bit of good news, but it's an expensive piece of good news, because that basically is telling the employer, I have to go through a $50,000, $100,000 or more arbitration proceeding with a private retired judge, probably. It costs a fortune just to send a message, just to get out of it. That's why your group members are hearing from their councils to settle these things.
Yeah, I get it. But that's huge, though, as an action step that employers right immediately can implement, make sure that everyone has signed an arbitration agreement, every new employee that comes in.
For sure. And the good news for several years was that arbitration agreements would essentially do away with class actions. And that's why the PAGA bar, let's call it, has morphed PAGA into the replacement for class actions. So it doesn't necessarily get you out of a PAGA case. It's a slight bit of good news. And there's another piece of good news, too, I can tell you about. And that is that there is some legislation coming up. I believe it's on the ballot in November, which could revise PAGA. It's still in the works, but I believe there will be a ballot measure in this November of 2024, which could revise it to the benefit of employers.
So what advice would you have for, I know we've already gone through a couple of them, but given this legislation coming up, it's probably pretty important now more than ever for business owners to get involved in that and to call their representatives to voice their support of this.
Call your representatives, call your groups, call KEA. You know, lobbyists, representatives, trade groups, business bureaus, they all have to be involved in this sort of thing because the pushback will be severe, as you can imagine.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm sure we're going to have you back to dive in deeper to more different aspects of PAGA. But this was a great primer with some great action steps so that our members know a little bit more and what to expect when this happens. But we'll definitely have you back to deep dive even more into PAGA.
I'm happy to, Kaya. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Have a great day. Thank you for joining us on the Self-Insurance Podcast brought to you by CRNBC. If there's a topic you'd like to learn more about or if you have any questions, please email us at info@crnbc.com. Make sure to subscribe, comment, like, and share, and please join us again for more self-insurance insights.